Item 12, public hearing, Atlantic Menhaden.
Okay, good afternoon, Commissioner, members of the Commission. Last month was a discussion item of this issue, and at that time, staff only presented partial information, and that information concerned the outcome of the events of December 14th, 2012, when the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission adopted Amendment 2. And as part of Amendment 2, there was a 20% reduction in total allowable landing. So staff informed you of that last month. And last month, there was also information that was gone over almost in a line-by-line sequence of the information from the two legislative bills, House Bill 2254 and Senate Bill 1291. Since that time, and it's in your evaluation, there was an adoption of the version that's in your packet entitled S-1291. That was effective upon signature of the governor under the Governor Act of Assembly law. And so at this time, there is effective law regarding the management of Menhaden. One other thing that occurred, there was another amendment, and it's in your packet, and it's also referred to in your evaluation. But what it did in substance was to ensure that the gear types in the non-purseine Menhaden bait fishery, those gear types that include haul seine, gill net, pound net, fike net, some other gear types, that they would have their own allocation, those gear types, based on their performance during the 2002 to 2011 period, that 10-year period average. That was something that was done by an amendment, and it was also approved in your packet if you look back in the S-1291 part of your evaluation. And that follows, it looks like, on page, when you get to page 13 of the issues in the evaluation, you're just headed back towards that way with information there with the recommendation. The public notice follows. This was advertised in accordance with 282209 of the Code of Virginia. And then the last section is the Virginia Acts of Assembly. And most of that was gone over. And then finally at the end, which staff will provide you with section by section of a new regulation on Menhaden. I think what's different about the regulation on Menhaden and the Commission's role is that the Commission is very familiar with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission and mandates that stem from management plans. Those mandates are requirements by public law. In the case of the ASMFC, it's public law 103206. At the same time, the Commission often has some leeway to have measures that achieve conservation equivalency with the plan. So, for example, there could be one season or another, whichever meets the mandated reduction. There could be, as you know, for some of the recreational fisheries, size limits and possession limits. They could be different scenarios depending on what meets conservation equivalency. What's unusual today is you now have a mandate from the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and you have that enacted into Virginia law under the Code of Virginia, and those are mandates as well. So it's very important to point out that the Commission for years has had very little authority at all other than license sales for the Menhaden industry. At this time, with the new adopted legislation and the law, that pretty much remains the same, because if you read S-1291, you'll see that the Commission is actually being charged with what it needs to do in order to comply with the Code of Virginia. The other part of this is it may be an ephemeral process in that 2013 and 14 are the only times that this law is in effect. It will sunset January 1, 2015. So difficult to say what the future is, but I thought it was important just to let you know about the situation with management in Virginia and how limited it is beyond the scope of the General Assembly. What I wanted to do first was I realized last month that since it was a very brief presentation by staff and it mainly centered on what happened, that some commission members didn't have any background of how it happened. And so I've gone to the ASMFC materials and I've pulled information to provide a little bit of the background of where things got started and why they ended up the way they did. So this first picture, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on anything. I can always come back, but this is just age-specific, looking at the abundance, essentially, in billions. So this is unusual. You don't often see something where it talks about abundance in billions. The color chart might be hard to pick up, but a lot of these are the 0, 1s, and 2s, and some 3s, although in some years you can pick out some of the older ages. So that's abundance. This I wanted to show you because there was lots of controversy, which I'm not going to spend very much time on, but there was a lot of controversy over the assessment of Atlantic Menhaden. The controversy was that there was a 2010 assessment which went through data year 2008. And that started the Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission process towards Amendment 2. In the interim, the management board at ASMFC said, well, we're going to need a somewhat fast-track update to that stock assessment. And the one in 2010 had been what's called benchmark, where you can try different models, different approaches, different indices. The one in 2012 was simply an update. You use the same models, you use the same indices, you use the same information. You just have more recent fisheries data, for example, or the catch per unit effort from the indices is more modern. One of the big controversies centered on the fact that there were flaws in the updated assessment in 2012, and the word around the ASMFC, which really sent, I'd say, paroxysms of concern throughout the ASMFC, was the assessment blew up. Of course, what that was referring to is really the 2012 assessment. There were a lot of information, especially in the projection base, and also you can see here in fishing mortality rate, that made it impossible for the ASMFC to latch on to go forward in any direction other than what they eventually said, that overfishing was occurring previously. The technical committee of ASMFC decided that they felt that there was still overfishing, but there were certain things that couldn't be done because the 2012 assessment was flawed. One of the controversies was, and it's a little bit unusual to hear about, but there are ways that fishery operates that it selects fish. Often it doesn't select the smallest fish. There may be escapement of the largest fish. But in some models, the assumption is that once you get up to the medium-sized fish or medium-sized age, there's flat-top selectivity. Everything's selected evenly. There's another approach with this, I'll call it pink line here, which shows a difference with a dome shape where the selectivity is not very good at the young ages, misses the old ages, and really is concentrated on the middle ages. That's just one idea to tell you there were lots of conversation, lots of problems at ASMFC with this update, to the point where a big debate ensued at ASMFC. If the 2012 assessment is flawed and it uses the same information except for a little bit of update from the 2010 assessment, the 2010 assessment is flawed. And those type of conversations did happen. They did go on. The end result, as you'll see in a few later comments, is the ASMFC held to the fact that there is overfishing. This gives you an idea of the landings. So when you have abundance and when you have fishing mortality rate, the landings respond to that. And in this case, in the blue is the reduction fishery over time, over many years from 1940 to 2011. And here is the bait fishery. It looks like about 1985 on. And you can see the large rise in the bait fishery in the last few years. And you'll especially notice some other information later on as to which states really had that rise. Here again is the bait fishery. You can see it cycling up. New Jersey was one of the principal reasons that that bait landing cycled up. And then something that probably is not evident to everyone, but with the reduction fishery, which is now omega protein, the history is that there was a lot going on in prior years. So you can see down here in the bottom, there were 8 menhaden factory plants and ships in 1992. It dropped to 2, and it is down to 1. And you can see the concerns, as in companies that were involved through time. You can also see the vessels in operation, 37 and down to 13. The asterisk just means there are the smaller purseine vessels, the snapper rigs, that also contribute or did contribute to Omega's landings, and that's why they're included there. This tells you a little bit about the recruitment, essentially, in terms of a catch per unit effort, and the update, which means 2012, is portrayed against the benchmark, which is in red. So you can see here in 2008, that ended the data stream for the benchmark assessment, and you can see that 2011, which is the last year of the 2012 assessment as far as data, that was trending down. At the same time, you see something that's called retrospective a little bit, to where you are here at 2008. When another model is run, it reconfigures fishing mortality rates, abundance, recruitment, and in this case, you can see that it's actually portrayed as a little bit higher, that 2008 value. This is pulled straight from the proceedings of the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission meeting 2012, and I thought it was important for the commission to see the events the way they were, what the management board looked at, how the choices were made. So one large change was that the Atlantic States started before this process in having new biological reference points on the overfishing. And these are called MSPs, which is just this. All this means is if you fish at a rate of 1.32, it'll be equivalent to fishing about 15% compared to a spawning stock which has not been touched, is unfished. That's the convention there. The one thing that staff can say about these reference points are they're pretty strict. No matter where we have looked, they are pretty strict, just so you know for the future, in that the distance, if we can call it that, between the threshold and the target are very steep. That's a very steep amount. A lot of threshold target situations have been in the past, especially in the federal system, been involved with setting up the target 75% of the threshold, perhaps. So these are steep. And here you have the statement that was given to the management board. Overfishing is occurring. The board must take steps to reduce fishing mortality to the new target. The catch there is no one's sure about the target as such on how that's going to be done. There was a lot of debate at ASMSC, which covered two meetings, parts of two meetings. Do we, as a group of states, want to get to the threshold? If we're overfishing, everyone understands that. Do we want to get to the threshold, get below the threshold, which is not a safe zone to be, or are we mandated to go straight to the target? So that had many different conversations as well. This gives you an idea of the public comment that went into Amendment 2. Many comments received, to say the least. Certainly 354 were individual comments. Many chain comments, or cosign letters as they're called, and attendance was about 502 individuals. These are the issues that were provided to the management board that day, and they cover anywhere from the reference points all the way down to de minimis and complementary action in federal waters. The one that was covered last month was the total allowable catch that staff went over last month. So the board is considering a two-step process because of what has occurred. The advice coming from the assessments has not been suitable, and they do want to reduce fishing mortality to the threshold, the management board, and then there will be a reduction schedule for fishing mortality rate coming up here. Some of the problems that the 2012 stock assessment ran into, besides the example that I gave you, were the way that the age data was weighted, the lack of spatial modeling. It's certainly a consideration that most of the coverage of menhaden as a stock has not taken into account the northern extent. There has been some efforts by Omega Protein to have that done with aerial flights to get one piece of information. As everyone knows with stock assessments, you need several years of that. That certainly has been something that's been talked about since. The other thing is there's a lack of a coastwide adult abundance index. Right now, the main adult index is in the Potomac River, that single index, and there was poor fit to that index in the 2012 assessment. And then I mentioned the retrospective pattern. All that means is when you are running models in the results and you go year to year, in the last terminal year you have, if it's 2010, just to give you an example, it might say that your stock abundance is here. You come back with another model run, it might tell you that your stock abundance really is here or here. So that's your retrospective, and it follows back in time. In the, I'll call it light brown. I'm not sure what color it looks on the screen. Yeah, light brown's okay. In light brown, as you see these slides, that's what the management board made their decisions as they went through this process. So in terms of biological data, it's clear that there's still some information that the technical committee needs to supply, but there is in the law, in our law, there is the requirement to do sampling. And the other part is that all states with stationary gears will collect catch and effort data, including age and length, and we'll certainly have to be doing that as well, which will be another challenge to add to the biological sampling program. Harvest will be restricted through TAC. You can see that 114,000 plus of the public comments felt strongly about that, and not too many felt very, there weren't too many who supported not having a TAC. Really, a TAC is usually reserved for total allowable catch, where you know something about not only the landings but the discards. In this case, and you'll see in the Code of Virginia, in your evaluation, it's total allowable landings that really are being contemplated. So to set the tack, there's this ad hoc approach, which I gave you a little bit of information earlier about the 75% approach the federals have used for setting targets from thresholds. The same situation applies here. There have been management plans which used multipliers, and they ranged from keeping things status quo, zero reduction, all the way to having a 50% multiplier, meaning a 50% reduction. What was eventually chosen, you may have read about this in the press, was that there was quite an attempt at negotiation to start with a 10, go to a 15%, maybe go to 15% one year, 20% the second year. However, all those attempts did not pass, and what passed eventually was a 20% reduction. So the multiplier was 0.8. So there's a 20% reduction everywhere, all the states that are involved. What you'll see a little bit later is that some states, most states, have a very small interest in the menhaden. So it's going to be managed on a state basis. What that meant was it allowed, once this 20% was done, it allowed the states to take 80% of what they had from 2009 to 2011, a three-year period, and decide how that would be further allocated, if necessary, on a fishery-by-fishery basis. This gives you an indication of the ranking of Virginia with a little over 85%, and this tells you here, this was actually the, for the 20%, the time period was 2009 through 2011. You'll see more clearly in some other graphs, but New Jersey's about 11%, Maryland 1.4% roughly. The other states have relatively small landings in the time period 2009 to 11. And this is the allocation on a state basis. And I know you saw this last month, 318,067,167 pounds is the Virginia allocation after the 20% reduction and after 1% for episodic set-asides, which still are being debated at ASMSC a little bit as to who's going to be allowed those set-asides. It was thought initially that everyone was talking about Maine, which every once in a while we'll see an abundance of menhaden, and that's an episodic set-aside. But the ASMSC now has to make sure that the episodic set-aside doesn't become part of the management for some of these states that have low allocations. This was a prolonged discussion at the ASMFC. There were options for bycatch, meaning when the fisheries closed, and for us such as the non-purseine bait fishery, that pound net, gill net, the other gears, that there would be a 6,000-pound bycatch. That was done outside of the amendment menu, but it was still something that the ASMFC felt was legitimate to proceed that way. And as you'll see in the regulation in a little bit, and you can also see in the law, you know, that is to be tabulated. That has to be recorded or reported, but that does not count against the total allowable landings. And here are the episodic events. And that really wasn't finalized last ASMSC meeting, how that would work out. However, if by September that amount isn't used, it comes back to the states in proportion to their allocation from the 20%. And, of course, you can see that if you're greater than 2%, you're not eligible, so these are the states that they consider greater than 2%. There is payback, which the commission is very familiar with other species, and, you know, it would be a pound-for-pound payback other than the 6,000-pound per day allowance for, you know, having the bycatch. There was an adjustment to the Chesapeake Bay cap in 2006. The Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission established a cap for removals of menhaden from the Chesapeake Bay, and that was set at 2001 through 2005, the average of those landings. And there was debate as to whether a cap was still needed or not, given the allocation and the 20% reduction. But in the end result, it was voted to have the cap continue, and it went down by 20%. So it was just above 109,000 metric tons, so now it's 20% less. And you'll see something on that in a minute. De minimis is part of this plan. De minimis is usually with other plans that you've looked at, usually holds at the 1%. It's usually, to give you a bad example right now, but for weak fish, it's 1% of the previous 2 years' recreational and commercial landings, the average. So different plans have different methods of determining de minimis, but usually they're very low amounts, based on very low amounts of landings. And this was chosen the bait landings in the last 2 years not greater than 1%. And, of course, that has some implications here because you can look very carefully. And, again, other than the three states of New Jersey, Maryland, and Virginia, you have a lot of de minimis states. And I guess you may know, but, you know, being de minimis doesn't mean that you haven't been shipped menhaden or haven't received menhaden or that there's not a network or a flow of menhaden product throughout many of these states, especially Maine, which once the herring fishery started to decline somewhat, became dependent on menhaden for the lobster fishery. So it's, you know, it's probably worth noting that. This is just a frame that shows you how the Virginia 20% reduction and the associated total allowable landings was arrived, starting with everything coming out, including recreational catch. Recreational catch was part of the prevailing landings that were used for 2009 through 2011, only to give the maximum amount of landings to give emphasis to what the stock, what was removed. However, recreational measures are not part of this amendment. So there are no requirements for recreational fisheries, and in the regulation you'll see that as well. You saw this last month, but just to tell you briefly, using the average 2009 through 2011 meant that we did end up with less for the 2013 and 2014 allocation, because 2012 was even higher than the average of 2009 through 2011. New Jersey's in the same situation with their bait fishery. They had high landings in 2012. Reportedly, their reduction is more than 20%. Reportedly, it's getting closer to 45% or even 50% because of that 2012. And I know that that was certainly a concern of industry members here, was that 2012 couldn't be included because the data weren't finalized yet. There's a very light shading here in both of these graphs, and the significance of the shading is that internally what was chosen through the General Assembly process was a 10-year basis for allocation of the 318 million plus pounds among the three sectors in Virginia: the reduction sector, per same reduction, per same bait sector, and non-per same bait sector. So the 10-year was chosen internally, and again, if you look at what the ASMSC did for all the states, they just said it was the most recent 3 years, 2009 through 2011. That does have implications. The 10-year down here, you can see by looking in any one column that, first of all, what you can see, there was no single suite of measures for the three sectors that made every sector feel as if it was getting a gain. That just didn't happen. So the 10-year was chosen, and the way it turned out, it was the second best of the six options here. For the per seine, it was the second worst. Let me reverse that real quickly. It was the second best for the per seine bait sector. It was the second worst for the reduction sector. And you can see that pretty clearly, that all these values here are higher than 286 million. So that's the way that worked out. This is the non-bait per seine sector. And again, that's the one that also has the allocation that we'll show you shortly. This goes back to the cap, just so you can get an idea of the 20% reduction, 109,020 metric tons down to 87,000. At the same time, there's the same flexibility that if there's an underage in the cap in any 1 year, then the amount can rise. So in this case, the highest it could be would be 98,192 metric tons. So it could be adjusted just as with the previous 2006 through 2012 basis. And that's about 61% if you work out the how much that is in terms of pounds from the bay overall for Virginia. If you look at the bait quota by gear type, and there are 10 altogether, right away you're going to be able to see that pound net and gill net are the two prevailing gear types responsible for over 97%. There are other minor gear types, and each one was assigned a percentage based on the 2002 to 2010 average landings. And in the right-hand column, you can see the amounts that are associated with those gear types, again, with pound net having 3.4 million pounds out of the 5 million pounds. These also have to be monitored. Staff has already started monitoring, which is a new situation to be able to monitor these reports as close to real time as we can to make sure that at the end of the year we can stay within that 5 million. The regulation is a new regulation, and staff does want to go through it with you. Even though you have it in front of you, this will be fairly quick, but the main thing here is the expiration date and the sections of the code that apply to this regulation and really control this regulation. So we have a purpose, which is based on what the ASMSC did to comply with that. It can be a tongue twister, but these are the three types or tiers or sectors of the Menhaden fishery, and they're defined in the regulation. The total allowable landings, which is set by the code, and then you can see right here the amount that this is equivalent to, because the code does it in metric tons. This is the equivalency here. You can also see that the code directs that it shall be allocated to three sectors. And here is the allocation. So the amounts of the $318 million, which you saw earlier, are provided. And then an important point is that the clock has already started ticking. As of January 1, 2013, any landings that have accrued are part of that 2013 total allowable landings. And the overage, you know that there's payback. There is limited entry directed by the code for the commission to have qualifications that are established by the code. So these are mirrored right in the code section. And you can see that you've had to held a purse seine license in 2011, had 3 years of landings in Virginia, and used the purse seine gear once. I think what the other part which goes along with this is the commission is charged with developing the ITQ, individual transferable quota, and it's allocated according to each qualified licensee's rounded percentage share of the average 2007 through 2011 Menhaden landings. Each licensee qualified under the ITQ system may transfer quota to another ITQ depending on the approval of the commissioner.
Rob, I just noted that there are only four vessels, correct, that qualify under that ITQ.
Yes, there are. And I'll ask for a regulation check later just to make sure that the synopsis there held to what the regulation is, but it should. There's another section of the code which talks about the bait sector, and that is 2013 and 14. You saw the amounts earlier And these are provided in the regulation as well. In the Code of Virginia, Section 282.400.4, if there is a closure of the non-bait fishery, which is expected, it's very difficult to project at this time, but staff is projecting it could be September, is sort of the least common denominator. It has been a little later. It has been earlier. By closure and projections, what I mean is looking at the landings of other years and seeing about when that 5 million pounds would be taken. So we'll keep working on that so we can have a better idea for the commission as to the expectation. The reporting requirements are established in your regulation, and it is the Captain Daily Fishing Report. It's what the Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission required. I think you're going to have a public comment about that, that staff welcomes a little bit later on in terms of the best and accurate data, but this is in fact what the Atlantic States Commission agreed to on the Captain Daily Fishing Reports. And then you have down here that when there's something other than the purseine bait or purseine reduction fishery, when 90% of the non-purseine menhaden bait quota has been reached, there'll be a requirement to phone in your harvest. And that's what I have, Commissioner.
Thank you, Rob. Any questions for Rob at this point? Mr. Robbins.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, Rob, just a couple of quick questions. You indicated that there's a another benchmark assessment, I guess, scheduled for 2014. So in terms of what we might expect in the future for the reference points and development of reference points, that'll still have to play out through the assessment process. And then will that feed back into the ASMFC Management Board in late 2014 for the 2015 fishing year? What would the decision-making cycle be relative to those reference points or the schedule?
I think right now there's expectations from the board, at least, that by August 2014, if not a final decision, that at least it's close to being final, and that by the annual meeting in 2014, things will be established. And ASMFC has supported that process so far, so I think that's what we have to rely on. And certainly you saw in the law and also in the regulation that it would be a very cumbersome process if that isn't completed by that time to go back through the General Assembly process and get additional help there.
And just to follow up, the bycatch allowance fishery for the bait fishery that has a 6,000-pound bycatch allowance, is that something that will simply be monitored going forward? In other words, if a specific gear sector caps out, they would continue to be able to operate subject to that 6,000-pound bycatch allowance. So that doesn't count against the quota, but is that a level of catch that will simply be monitored by staff and then ultimately by ASMFC in the future?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think what happens is it will have to be reported. We may have to provide a little bit of information to make sure that happens as we go along the way. Once the fishery is closed, if it is around September sometime, then there will be more information provided to report that. If you recall that one table, the ASMFC had anywhere from 10,000 down to smaller amounts as to what they thought would be bycatch. So the ASMFC doesn't know right now what the right amount is. So they will definitely, or the ASMFC will definitely be looking at the states that have the bycatch and figuring out should that be adjusted one way or the other.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Plumley.
And these licenses are for individuals or vessels? These are for individuals, correct?
Yes.
What's the projected number of licenses?
In which particular sector? If it's the bait sector, we're looking, if it's the per seine bait sector, we're looking about four, or at four. I shouldn't say about, at four.
And it's not per vessel, but it's an individual holding the license.
Right.
Yeah, that's my question.
And I think there's language in the code that you have that I did not include because it's law, but it speaks to the license sales. And
bottom of page 4 of 6 in the legislation.
Yes. At the bottom of page 4 of 6, it's on each boat or vessel. So literally, I should have told you on the vessel. But it starts out that whole section. This, the code is famous for this, and I'm not complaining if there's a code master out there, but any person desiring to take or catch menhaden with personnet shall pay to the officer agent a license as follows. So I assume that's the person, even though the vessels are brought in. Okay.
Did that answer your question?
So that with regards to the allocation, it's to each person holding a license?
Yes. Yes.
There are four.
Right. There are four. The allocation is based on the performance of the vessel landings that happens to be owned by either a person or more than one person. So in this question, I would say it's probably clearer to say it's the performance of the vessel that determined the allocation. And you have four of them. So the person doesn't play in too much to that, whereas in the license sales, yes.
Any other questions? All right. Let's
I have one more item, and that is the staff recommendation would be to ask the commission to approve the new regulation 1270 in its entirety.
All new regulation. Thank you, Rob. This is a public hearing. Who wishes to be heard? Mr. Deal, come on up. Afternoon.
Afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity. My only comment is regarding the section on reporting requirements for the Menhaden Monty deal.
And who you represent?
I represent Omega Protein.
Thank you.
Are you swearing folks in?
Not in a public hearing.
Okay, that's right. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The requirement, as stated, asks that require that we submit our captain's daily fishing reports to the commission for accounting purposes on what we catch to track it against the requirement, the quota. I would recommend that we actually change that to our actual offloads. And while I do understand that National Marine Fisheries Service asks for these captain's daily fishing reports, they do not use them as the actual real landings. They use those for other reasons, such as lat-long position of catches to bounce off with ages of fish to track the stock that way, weather conditions and such. But they actually get our offloads weekly that we provide to them, so they have a real number and not an estimated number of landings. Many times our captains, their estimates on their CDFRs may vary by 10-15% up or down, and we want an actual number. I would recommend perhaps that we do the same thing that we do for the National Marine Fisheries Service, and that is provide the commission weekly our offloads for that week prior. We do that every Monday for the week prior. And then when we get to some percentage, like perhaps 2%, 3%, 5% from the quota, then we could actually provide you with those daily so that you have a real-time, realistic, and accurate number to help gauge this quota.
So Would you object if we added language to on page 4 of the regulation that says that the reduction sector and bait sectors shall weekly provide the actual offloaded poundages to the commission?
I think that'd be great.
And then when we get within, you said 3%, provide that daily?
Yes, sir. I use the term 2 to 3% because we are, again, within a day's catch of being 10% accurate. So we know in a fairly good time frame, probably within just a few days of when we're going to actually reach that quota.
Sure.
So I would it doesn't need to be a very small percent that we wait to get those daily, but at any given point would be fine.
The language that is here on page 4 mirrors what is in the code.
That's what I was going
to add. I don't think we can change that. I think we can add to it to capture even more accurate data. But the code actually requires the submission of these CDFRs.
Yes, sir. The commission's bound by the code.
And that's no problem. We can provide you that, too. I would just recommend that you also get the
on top of offload. On top of doing that, we get weekly these.
You can make
more
it more restrictive,
reports.
But you can't make it less restrictive unless you can't adjust the days.
What I would submit would be more accurate, and I'm not quibbling with you, sir, but the commission could add any additional reporting requirements that is permitted under its basic law in addition to what's specifically required in 28.2-400.5A. So they have to do 400.
They can add restrictions. They can add reports.
Right. They can.
You can't subtract from what the code says.
This is the bare minimum, but they can add. The commission can add.
You got that, Rob? Anything else, Mr. D?
Thank you.
Thank you for coming down. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify the difference. So the captain's daily log is basically a hail weight. I mean, it's an estimated weight versus the actual pack out weight.
Every time they make a set, they're required to log in the lat long, how many fish they estimate, how long they took, the exact weather conditions, wind speed, temperature, and everything. And it can vary based, from their actual offload. And the fact that oftentimes they may not come in for 2-3 days, we won't get those daily anyway. But we do at the end of each week send those in to NOAA, and at the same time we could send those in here. It will be a problem, as it states here, sending them in daily because we don't get them daily. The captains have no way to get those back in daily, but we can provide them the same time we provide them to NOAA at the end of each week.
And to follow up, is there an identifier like in what you're describing as an offload report? Is there also a trip identifier that identifies the vessel and relevant details that you could tie back to the captain's daily report?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. Who's next? Mr. Kellum.
Jimmy Kellum with Kellum Maritime and Ocean Bait. Here we are again, Jack, talking about menhaden.
I'm going to put you under oath before you.
I had two issues on my mind, but now I have three. You talked about who holds the license of the 4 bait license. I hold 2, and Frederick holds 2. But a Virginia corporation owns those. We buy the license through a Virginia corporation, and we just sign as an agent of the corporation. So to say that we hold those individually, we do not. So I would say that the corporation has to hold it, or the stockholders of each company are going to own a portion of a limited entry quota.
Right. And it's assigned, and it was the allocations were figured on the history of harvest by those 4 vessels, 2 of which are owned by you and your corporations. So the quotas are actually assigned to those 2 vessels.
Right.
And you've been provided that information.
Corporations, not any one individual.
I think I can clear this up real quick.
Go ahead.
just to clarify something, sir, under the law, a corporation is a person, so to say that an individual holds the license is applicable to a corporation holding a license. It's synonymous in this context. I know it's kind of strange for people to say, oh, a corporation is a person, but legally it just counts as an entity, as an individual. So to say an individual holds a license would also mean that a corporation holds a license as an individual. So it doesn't run afoul of stockholders owning or whatever. It's the corporation that holds the license as an individual.
I can't argue that because that's a legal statement, but I know we're incorporated to protect ourselves from lawsuits, you know, a corporation. So to view us as an individual, I think, though it may be that need to be that way in the wording, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything here that's going to cause you any problems. I mean, I think it's pretty clear how we allocated the quotas, and it's assigned to those vessels, which in this case happen to be owned by corporations.
Okay. All right. Issue number two is the license fee. Since 1989, I have personally purchased license for these corporations. It's always been $996 a year if you were up to enough tonnage. So this coming year, I'll have to buy four licenses because I have two boats. Each boat sell bait, and each boat will sell reduction fish to Omega Protein. So Omega's going to be allowed to catch 420 million fish with seven licenses. And for me to catch 27.4 million, I have to buy four licenses. Seems quite unfair for one individual in the state. I don't think there's a precedent that goes before us that taxes one individual that much to double my license fee. My alternative would be for us to buy a bait license. And if we have a contractual agreement with the processing factory to be able to sell off of our bait license instead of having to buy four licenses. It's a matter of 2,000 versus 4,000 for me. Won't put me out of business, but I think it's unfair. And I would like for the commission to address that issue.
It's fixed in the code.
And my third issue.
Yeah, I mean, just before you leave that issue, just for the record, the license fees and how they're set up are established in this new law, and the commission doesn't have the authority to change that. So I agree with your argument. You're going to face some substantial fees this year. But the solution is at the General Assembly, not here. It'd be something you'll have to carry next year before them if you want to pursue.
But the commission can carry it to the General Assembly as well. Certainly you're going to have a tidy up program behind this new
problem.
New issue. There are lots of things that need tidying up in it, and I'll get to that on issue three.
Okay.
So, all right. My third issue is we went to a 10-year average. ASMFC, I've sat with the commissioner at ASMFC. I thought we did as good a job for Virginia as we could do, and I appreciated his efforts. But when we got back to Virginia, we ended up with 318 million pounds. That's what ASMSC, that was our cut. So then we took a 10-year average at the General Assembly and said, that increases the bait landings to 26 million pounds. Well, personally, for my two vessels, that took me from 33 million in 2012 for reduction down to 7.4, and it raised me from 13 million for bait to 19 million for bait. My question is, can the commission, on a case-by-case basis, allow us to transfer? It will not change the 318 million pounds, but we need the ability, if the bait market is soft, if there are no crabs, if there are a lack of crawfish, and we can't catch this product and sell it for bait, can we come before the commission and be allowed to ask maybe to transfer 2 or 3 million fish at a time over from bait to reduction? Because we have a contractual agreement to sell them at the processing plant, and they have agreed if the commission would do this, it would give us some flexibility.
Here again, the answer to your question is established in state law, where it specifically takes that $318 million and allocates it as three separate quotas to the three sectors and doesn't allow transfer between sectors. Again, that's something, you know, that could be taken up during the next session to allow that kind of thing.
And I heard this argument, Mr. Commissioner, but I take exception with it because we have a provision in there to add back to our quota. We have a provision to add if we have an episodic event in the Gulf of Maine, we can add back to our 318 million pounds.
Right.
So the precedent has already been set to be able to change this 318 million pounds. I'm not even asking to change the 318 million pounds. I just want to be able to transfer poundage from one sector to another if the market, if we get to September and the crab market has been soft all year, we're going to have quota that's unused. If we have unused quota, then we open it up to Maryland and New Jersey to take it from us. You agree with that, Mr. Commissioner?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a loophole. We have a problem here. As the state of Virginia, do we want to use all of our quota, or do we want to give it to the northern states? I see you all nodding your heads with me. There has to be a recourse here. If the commission went to the Secretary of Natural Resources and he went to the governor, there has to be a provision to give us some flexibility. This is all new to us.
We didn't think of all of the problems when all of this was before the General Assembly, but what you want to do is not allowed for in the current legislation. And I don't see any way to change that between now and...
Well, what are you allowed to do as commissioner in this process? If we have a massive oil spill in this bay, do you have the power to shut us down?
To shut the fishery down? No.
So who could?
Who could shut the fishery down?
Yeah, if we had an episodic event in this bay, who's going to tell us to stop?
I, there's nothing in this law that tells you to stop. The only thing that tells you to stop here is when you've caught the quota or your sector allocation. That's when you stop.
I don't think this new legislation reflects what ASMFC's mandate was to us. Do you?
I think it responds to all the ASMFC mandates and then goes further to allow for the management at the state level. So in that sense, it goes beyond what ASMFC asked.
ASMFC only limited 318 million.
That's right. That's all they care about. Don't go over that 318 million. But we know we have different fisheries here in Virginia, and we had to allocate it amongst the bait and the reduction and the pound net fishery, et cetera.
I got a fourth issue then I'll bring up.
Okay.
Mr. Deal commented from Omega's point of view about matching fish tickets to Captain Daily fish reports. From our viewpoint in the bait industry, sometimes it's 3 or 4 days before we get an accurate count on what we put out on Monday. We have trucks that are grinding chum, and we would like to stay to the Captain's Daily fish report. We come pretty close on those smaller vessels.
At some point, are your fish weighed so you know the exact?
At some point, but not the day. It's not like
right.
Going to the factory where we get a ticket before we
right.
Back away from the dock.
But at the end of the week, would you know?
Sometimes. Sometimes it's into the following week. If we have a big day on Friday, sometimes it's Tuesday of the following week before. I know for my organization, I can't speak for the others.
All right. Do you have any objection to supplying us with those more accurate numbers?
Yeah, I have a problem with it because it doesn't ask for it.
What doesn't ask for it?
The Code of Virginia. If the Code of Virginia can't be tweaked to help me, then I don't feel obligated to help the Code of Virginia.
But in this case, it does allow the Commission to establish reporting requirements to make sure we don't go over quota.
You asked the question three times at ASMFC, are captain's daily fish reports enough? Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll stick with that.
All right. Anything else?
That's all. Thank you all for your
time. Thank you for coming. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. You next. Very
David
well.
George, representing myself. I was one of the original bait fishermen in the state of Virginia, early 80s. And I happened to sell my boat in 2007 vessel to New Jersey outfit. Still employed in the bait business. I heard one of the guys say this tonnage was set on four boats. When Virginia went to 10 years, it also included the fifth boat, which was mine. Understand that the tonnage, which I want to say was around 4 million pounds, it got counted and distributed between these boats working now. But then you close the fishery, like, I won't be able to get licensed anymore. And it just seems to be, you know, it took me right out of business, even though I still work for Mr. Kellum. I don't see how the state could count you on one end and eliminate you on the other. And I called Mr. Riley, and he was very good at explaining it to me, but I just wanted to hear it again.
Well, there's provisions in the in the code that was adopted that directed the commission how to set up this ITQ. And it specifies who is eligible for one of those licenses. And unfortunately, the years that were chosen to qualify for that license were years when you were not fishing. As a reason, when did you stop fishing?
2007.
And the code, which the General Assembly adopted, says that you shall have held a per se license in 2011 and landed Menhaden in 9, 10, and 11. As a result of those provisions, you were eliminated from the fishery. That left four boats that did meet those requirements, and therefore they share in the fish that are allocated to that sector.
You know, to me, it's like any business in Virginia. You know, you take the hard work and the fish catch, or in my case, fish catch, or the maybe, I don't know what the word would be, but and you distribute it to the other boats, and then you just eliminate it. And then I still have a freezer, and I still sell fish. And this could very well create a shortage of bait. And I depend on Jimmy catching fish and stuff like that, but it could eliminate the freezers. It could eliminate, you know, my customers. And I just, you know, wanted you to be aware of that. I also don't think it's exactly right.
You know, it's a lot of these arguments should have been made at the General Assembly. I don't mind hearing them again here today, but so much of the industry's efforts during the General Assembly were concentrated on figuring out how to allocate that 318 million pounds between the three sectors, and I think people let the either they didn't read this closely or weren't worried about it at the time.
Well, we're not
that
talking
some
about
of this got passed.
In fish, what happened in Baltimore? I was there, you know, but at that point in time, it was 3 years. And then come to find out, Virginia went back to 10 years, which included my fish. And, I mean, I guess I was taken back by surprise. I don't think it's foul. And, but I guess everybody else does. But, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mr. Commissioner, I've got a question. Is there any opportunity to go back during the veto session with any amendments or changes with this?
Not at this late date. There was the one amendment that Mr. O'Reilly mentioned that describes how we allocate that non-purseine bait sector quota to the pound netters, gill netters. That was initiated weeks ago to get it through the governor's office.
Get the package in and get everything in.
I think everything that the governor is doing on legislation for the veto session had to be completed by 6 o'clock yesterday. And I think it's all, you know, been made public at this point, or is about to be.
Thank you. I'm Chris Moore, Senior Scientist, Chesapeake Bay Foundation. First of all, I just want to thank Commissioner Travelstead for all the work he's put in on behalf of the state of Virginia on this issue for at least the last 6 months, and I know it's a lot longer period than that, but I think the state has been very well represented to have such an accomplished leader in the state of Virginia representing Virginia's interest on that, and thank you for all the work you've done. Also, I think I want to thank the governor and the General Assembly for getting Virginia into compliance. I think we're all well aware of what may have happened in Virginia here had we not passed legislation in order to get Virginia into compliance and actually have a fishery this year. And the governor and the GA are to be commended for that. Finally, I want to thank Rob and his staff, because I think they've done a tremendous amount of work trying to come up with a equitable fishery here in Virginia that's based on historic landings in a very short period of time. As we all know, this decision was made until December, and we've had an extremely short period of time in order to come up with something that we really never had before, and it's a very historical fishery in Virginia, but had not been studied to this degree. This is a fishery, as Rob mentioned, that we're currently overfishing, and this plan is put in place to try to get us out of an overfishing situation and get us into a situation where we have a healthy, robust stock of menhaden in the future. Hopefully the actions as part of this today will start the rebuilding process for this species and will be beneficial to both the ecology of the Chesapeake Bay, the entire Atlantic coast, and to those who catch menhaden in this region as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. I would say that, this is not my preferred way on how we went about the legislation. This was an emergency piece of legislation. All of this had to be dealt with in just a matter of a few weeks from December 14th, the time that ASMFC made their final decisions, to the point where legislation had to be introduced in the General Assembly. I hope we don't have to go through this again, that we at least don't have to use the emergency approach to try to work these things out, and that we'll hopefully in the future have several more months to sit down with industry and consider all the ramifications of these provisions and satisfy some of these other concerns we've heard today. Anyone else wish to speak? All right, we're going to close the public hearing. Any final questions of staff at this point? Or Rob, you have any final comments?
I appreciate those who commented from the public and have worked with staff and with the commissioner throughout this process. Needless to say, it hasn't been the best process at times, but we did have to reach a conclusion, and the conclusion is in the form of the regulation. And I did want to thank Mr. Kugelman. Although he didn't visit me and I didn't visit him, we did talk to each other regularly so that the commission could have the best product possible in terms of the regulation.
Thank you. Mr. Robbins.
Just a couple of follow-up questions, Mr. Chairman. Rob, from staff's perspective, can you comment on the possibility of obtaining the weekly offload report and whether that additional accuracy, in your estimation, is worth pursuing through adding that requirement? And is that something that you all would be able to monitor or add to your monitoring process?
I think we'd like to be careful about what Mr. Kugelman said and the way the code has been written. There has been a voluntary approach taken by Mr. Deal on behalf of Omega Protein to provide more accurate data. So I think that's something that I'll make sure that we do work with, if that's what you're indicating. In fact, 282204 of the Code of Virginia, although not a section cited in this legislation, nonetheless, in point 6, it provides the commission the authority to obtain the estimated capacity of fish processing facilities and the actual amount of fish processed at those facilities. So I think we're on solid ground and do favor the fact that Mr. Deal already offered that. So I think we're okay there. The other part for the description by Mr. Kellum of the menhaden bait sector, you know, that's something that is at odds with the way the code is written and the regulation. And I think we probably have to keep working to find a, you know, a basis to get that information. I'm sure we will have that information, and even if the CDFRs are not forthcoming until the next week, there's going to have to be a point where I think we would have to know that we're getting close to that quota at a minimum, and at a maximum be able to have a better relationship to have more accurate data than the CDFRs are as the way they're promoted by industry, as and they are just estimates. So I don't know, unless Mr. Kugelman can tell me, whether that's something we're able to address in this regulation. The first part, yes, with the omega protein situation, that seems pretty clear to me.
Is that a question you would?
Well, we do have, we do not have 282204 as directly. We have 282204.1 as part of the legislation. But 282204 is the broad authority for the commission to collect fishery statistics. And
there's nothing in the, I'm sorry, Rob.
Okay.
I don't see anything in the code that restricts the commission from adopting anything else that has the jurisdiction to adopt. Another thing just to throw out there is that it certainly would be helpful if there was a more accurate way to assess it that industry would want to, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, help the code. It's not so much helping the code as it is helping industry get a better read on what's going on, and it would be helpful if we had their input as well, just to get an idea what how that should go. But as far as the legal requirements go, I don't see anything that restricts the commission from adopting something in addition to what's in 400.5A.
Yeah, I think we need something in there that captures the more accurate data for the purse-seine sector, and I think, I mean, Rob has pointed out 28.2-204 says the commission may collect from any source any fisheries data and information necessary. That's existing law. I think that's pretty broad, and that gives us the authority to add to the language that you see there on page 4 of the regulation in section 60, paragraph A. I mean, I think you, if we don't accurately monitor these quotas, and the public is aware of that, and ultimately ASMFC is aware of that, I think we're just digging ourselves into a hole that we'll end up paying back for at some point.
May I, Commissioner? I am in full agreement that the commission has the ability to stipulate the reporting requirements. At the same time, I heard what Mr. Kellum said. I don't know whether it's for all four vessels, that sometime it is roughly 9 days before they have the CDFRs from 9 days previous.
I think they have the CDFRs
to turn
daily.
To turn in.
What they don't have are the actual weigh-out data. I mean, that would come later. And that's what Mr. Deal is suggesting at the end of the week they would have.
Right. If I can...
May I throw something out, Commissioner? I mean, and I don't know if this is the confusion. The CDFRs must come in.
Right. It's in code.
And then under 282.204, the commission can work up any reporting requirements additionally that it deems necessary to accurately track. Well, it deems necessary, period. It doesn't even have to be to accurately track, and that's the intent. But don't constrain yourself by CDFR.
Right.
Yeah, I think to capture Mr. Kellum's concern, you could require the actual offload data every 10 days.
Right. That's where I was getting at.
Instead of weekly.
And that is
until you get to, say, the 3%.
At some point. So staff would put in the regulation or recommend to the commission nothing about the CDFRs because they're automatically supposed to be turned in according to code. But for what Mr. Deal proposed, staff would add for the reduction fishery.
For the per seine fishery.
Per seine reduction?
Overall?
Per seine.
All per seine.
All per seine. Okay. The following Monday, something like that, following week?
About Tuesday or Wednesday of the following week, something
okay.
like that.
And then we have a trigger for the per seine reduction, which is language that when it reaches 2 to 3% remaining in the quota, there would be daily telephone correspondence from Omega protein. Would we put the same for the bait sector?
Yep.
So if we're doing all that...
Paragraph A pertains to both the per seine reduction sector and the per seine bait sector. So I think all of these would apply equally to those two sectors.
Okay. All right. I thought
that would be my recommendation.
Well, it's a good idea to bring all that up right now.
Any other questions, Rob?
I have one other thing, Commissioner. There are some blue paper items that just came up. Actually, it's one comment from Mrs. Lewis. Pretty straightforward, but... Mrs. Lewis has been active with this issue and is commenting that her husband is not able to pursue the fishery in Virginia because of all the actions.
Any other questions? All right, the matter's before the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based on the discussion that we've had and the testimony we've heard, I would offer a motion that we adopt staff's recommendation to adopt all provisions of Draft Chapter 4 VAC 20-1270-10, including the discussed amendment to require offloading data for the per seine vessels on a weekly basis. And if you need more specificity in that, we can certainly discuss it if you think that's adequate. And staff can perfect the language to reflect the discussion we've had about whether you want that in on a Tuesday or Wednesday of the week or what specific date you want that completed by. We can have that discussion, but would offer that motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
So moved.
Seconded by Mr. Tankard. Discussion on the motion? I think we need to give staff some clear guidance on the amendment
your motion suggests that language be added to that paragraph. I want to make sure I understand what you've said. Such that the purchasing vessel shall provide a report of the actual offloading data for the prior week by, for sake of argument, let's say Wednesday of the following week, throughout the season, and then at the point where 97% of the either sector's quota has been taken, those reports go to daily, I guess, telephone calls to the agency. Is that what you had in mind with your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, again, reflecting on the discussion that we've already had, I would point out, I think this is the first time going forward with monitoring the quota in this fishery. The fact that this offloading information is more accurate than a hail weight, I think would be well served to collect that information since it is available. But recognize, too, that a lot of these details about how the commission's going to effectively monitor the quota right there as you come towards the quota itself at the end, that process is going to have to evolve. We've seen it in a lot of other fisheries in the state where, in the early stages of the fishery, it's challenging to precisely monitor a quota. But over time, the dealers and the agency develop a closer working relationship and eventually work it out between themselves about how to make sure we get the information in a timely way. So we've been through that cycle with a lot of other fisheries. I would submit that staff put together solid recommendations for the starting point for this, and then I think that can evolve in the future and be enhanced.
Good point. Any other comments?
I don't see that we can wait in establishing the regulations. I think they will evolve. I think there will be important challenges to the regulations, but that we cannot wait due to the nature of how this is progressing. So to some degree, I think our hands have been tied. We'd like to see some changes, but we can't at this point make those changes. We're going to have everyone participate in the process, and if they feel passionate about moving forward with changes, that they continue to press us and the General Assembly about making it happen.
Good point. Any other comments? Seeing none, we ready to vote. The motion is to approve Regulation 1270 as amended. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion carries, and the regulation is adopted. Thank you all for coming for that item.